Cook, and I cordially welcome you into my podcast, Mein Musikleben. I have studied classical singing and voice, and I love to sing lots of contemporary and experimental music. And if you would like to know more about me, please look at my website. And you can also subscribe to my monthly newsletter, and then you will be informed about anything I'm doing. In this podcast, I talk about all the themes all around the contemporary music realm. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and I bring you the human beings out of this world closer to you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ. And in this episode, I'm cooperating with Rainy Days Festival Luxembourg, which is an amazing festival with contemporary music, curated by Catherine Kons, and this year's theme is bodies. And I will put the link for you into the show notes that you can look at the program. And if you want to go there, look at the tickets. They have a day pass or a festival pass for a very reasonable price. In this episode, I have the honor to talk with the composer Michael Parsons. Michael Parsons is artist in residency this year at the Rainy Days Festival. He's going to talk all the performances he's going to have at the Rainy Days Festival 2025. So here is the conversation with Michael Parsons.
Hello, Michael Parsons. I welcome you today into my podcast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And the first question I have for you is, how did you get into this world of new and experimental music?
It was really through Cornelius Cardew in the 1960s. He was doing interesting things, experimental music. He'd been in Germany studying with Karlheinz Stockhausen, and he came back to England in 1960, and he became a bit disillusioned with the serialism and the avant-garde, and then he became more interested in John Cage and the American experimental music. And then he started a group which was originally an experimental music class in London, and that developed into the Scratch Orchestra because more people came to it than could be included in the class. So we had to find bigger spaces, and also he had an ambitious work which needed a lot of performers. So we all became looking for students and friends and other people to join. So We gathered together a lot of people who maybe necessarily hadn't thought of themselves before as being performers.
You just heard about it and you showed up.
Yes.
And you had no clue about this kind of music before.
Well, some of us had varying degrees of experience. It was a mixed group. Some musicians, some from jazz background, some improvisers, some performance artists, and some who are students at the Royal Academy of Music.
And what were you doing at this point when you?
Well, I'd been studying classic.
Ah, okay. So you were already in the music realm, but not the wild stuff yet.
Well, no. I was studying classical languages originally at Oxford University, and I was a student in Latin and Greek, and I was very interested in languages, and especially the structure of and syntax and how language works. And then I came in touch with other students who were interested in new music. But I'd always been interested in music because my family background was very musical in the European classics, and so I was brought up really with Bach and Beethoven and Mozart and the traditional music. And then I became interested in as a teenager, really. I wanted to find out what had happened in the 20th century, because my background in music was mainly classical and romantic. And then I became interested in Mahler at one point. And And then I wanted to know what came after Mahler. So I became interested in Schoenberg and Webern. And then, so I had this background in 20th century music, which I was exploring. And then when I met Cardew, he really introduced me to what was going on in, especially in Europe and in America, and in New York specifically, with John Cage and Morton Feldman and Christian Wolff and David Tudor, of course, the pianist. And so I was ready to go on exploring in that direction.
And then you also became a composer yourself.
Yes, well, gradually. I mean, I had been composing as a teenager, so kind of mostly kind of fairly derivative pieces in a classical style. But yes, I somehow had the curiosity to want to make music, to compose music, as well as just to listen and to play. It happened gradually, but especially during the 1960s, I became more and more interested in composing. So it was a gradual discovery, really.
You got inspired by many important figures you just mentioned. I'm sure you learned a lot from them.
Yes, well, I, of course, at that age, one is discovering new things all the time. So I was, but at the moment, at first, I was rather skeptical about John Cage and using chants, and then because Cardew was very persuasive, and he was also a very good pianist, and he played this music. So I gradually became more interested in this use of chants. Seemed to me to be at first to be completely crazy, because it seemed to go against all the principles which I'd grown up with, of having a coherent musical structure which one could follow what was happening. John Cage really threw that all out of the window and started completely from the idea of all sounds being inclusive. And so I was thrown really from one extreme to the other, and it took a while to assimilate all of that.
Yes. And you also mentioned that you were into languages earlier on, like Latin and Greek. I also learned Latin for a really very long time, and I really liked it.
Yes.
And it helps also to learn other languages, actually. But
oh, yeah.
Even though that was way back then, do you still feel it influenced things, how you whatever composed your works with this knowledge of those two very old
languages?
Oh,
yes, definitely. Because I was always very interested in the structure of language and the way things connected together, the grammar and the syntax. And I'm still very interested in that in musical terms as well. I like to find out how things are connected. And so I studied the traditional harmony and then the atonal harmony. And so, yes, I was interested in the structure of music, from understanding the way it's put together, and I still am very interested in that. But somehow over the years I've integrated the ideas that came from America, from New York and specifically. But I've tried to find a balance, and this continued throughout my life, and even today it still continues, between being interested in the grammar and the structure of music, and also being open to things which are not controlled in that way, but things which can happen unexpectedly, and things which can't really be explained in terms of that kind of rational organization. So I have both of these sides in my musical development, and I try to find different ways of keeping them in some kind of balance. I'm still a bit skeptical about John Cage, in the sense that I think, although it's very refreshing to understand what he was doing, at the same time, the music itself is often not very interesting, because it's too open, it's too inclusive. It seems to lack that kind of discipline structure, which for me is an essential part of music. So I want to take certain things from that tradition of John Cage, And I want to, at the same time, remain resistant to going so far as he did. So I'm trying to find ways of balancing those two things, the rational and the more open and intuitive. So everything I do, I think, can somehow be explained in these terms. You can find rational things. I always like to have a rational structure when I'm composing, but then I like to contradict and disrupt this structure by doing things which perhaps wouldn't be considered part of that rational approach. So, for example, in the piano pieces which we're going to play in the Rainy Days Festival with another pianist, as Siwan Rees is my partner in performing these pieces, and in these they're called time space pieces, and they're written in a kind of notation which doesn't use any bar lines or any durations. They're written notes spaced out on the page but without durations. The notes are all completely predetermined and controlled. So that's the rational part of it. But then the chance aspect of it is that the parts are not coordinated. So they're played simultaneously and they interact with each other. The result is something which is both rational and irrational at the same time, if that makes any sense. So,
yeah, it's really great that you mentioned this, because the reason also why we are talking here is because of Rainy Days Festivals in Luxembourg. And my podcast is cooperating with them. And you are also the artist in residence, as I understood, for the whole festival or something like that.
Yes.
And you also present different pieces and different qualities and aspects of your composing. And now you already mentioned this piano piece, and what else is gonna, or can we listen but from your music, or what would you like to highlight that is going to be played at Rainy Days this year?
Well, there's an orchestral piece which was commissioned by the BBC and was performed in Glasgow last year, I think it was, eventually, because it was delayed by lockdown and all these things which we couldn't do the original performance when it was originally planned for, I think, 2020 or 21. So it was delayed, but it was eventually performed in 2024. And Catherine, in particular, asked for that piece to be played again at the festival. So she asked Ilan Volkov to come to Luxembourg and to work with the orchestra there. So that's actually a fully composed piece. That's fully notated. There's no chance element in that at all. So that represents, in a sense, more towards the rational side of my composing. But the piano pieces, on the other hand, include things which could never be exactly repeated, because the timing is very flexible and it happens differently every time. So those represent two aspects of this way of finding a balance, sometimes going towards one end and sometimes going the other. So two opposite extremes represented there, but with the piano pieces and the orchestral piece. Does that make sense?
Yes, certainly. Are there any other pieces played by you, or are those the two pieces that are played?
Well, there's also a walking piece. Which...
Yeah, that's what I heard about, because that really fits to the theme also, the bodies. And yeah, yes. I heard about that. What is that about?
So it's a piece I wrote at the time of the Scratch Orchestra, because a lot of the participants in the Scratch Orchestra weren't trained musicians. And I wanted to do something which everybody could take part in. And I thought of the idea of taking a familiar activity like walking and making a sort of structure out of it by specifying direction of walking and speed of walking and standing still before changing direction and moving off again. and other parameters, if you like, which could be specified in advance, and then the performers would set off in different directions, walking at different speeds, and then they would interact and intersect in different ways. And this was really influenced by simply watching people walking in open spaces, like on railway stations, where you see people crisscrossing the space and sometimes hurrying, sometimes going very slowly or waiting. So it's really a sort of counterpoint of movement and standing still, because the standing still is also important as a way of contrasting with the movement. The performers also stand still for different lengths of time.
And
So,
who's going to perform this piece?
well, there are some dancers. There's a dance school in Luxembourg, and Catherine made contact with the dance teacher and asked if some of the students there would like to take part in this, and she's agreed. And I have to talk to her again later this morning, because we haven't yet quite agreed how many performers would like to take part, and so it's still quite open how we interpret it in this context. But every time it's different.
I also find it
So,
interesting that you work both with professional, whatever, musician, artists, and people who are enjoying it, but they're not professionals. So
yes,
what qualities do you appreciate then in performers you work with?
well, you get different skills and different people with different approaches, and so it's always surprising what they do with a piece. It's not like working with a group of classically trained musicians, where you can, of course, there are different nuances of interpretation, but you can be fairly sure that the music is going to be something which is recognizable, which retains a kind of identity through the score. But working with non-musicians, they come with different ideas, and they might interpret it quite differently. So I like to be open to that as well, because they don't have the notation to restrict them in that way. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with that on this occasion. I've done this walking piece many times and in different contexts, sometimes in the open air, sometimes in enclosed spaces, sometimes with dancers, several times before with groups of dancers, but also with people who are not trained as musicians or as dancers, and they of course walk in a completely different way, and in a much more informal and relaxed way. So the open air versions with untrained performers are completely different from the more formal versions with trained performers. So I think this
Since you have
one
done already a
will.
few performances, you have seen so many options already. Can they still
Yes,
surprise you?
but it changes every time I do it. I think of new ways of doing it. So I don't want to
Or you
repeat
change
exactly
it
what
too,
I've
or
done
you
before.
explain it differently, or
Yes, I see how they're reacting, and also depending on the size and dimensions of the space is important, because they have to select points of reference in the space for direction of movement and so on. And it's something that can really only be done in a specific situation. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how they respond to this challenge.
Great. Yeah, so you're going to be for quite a while now in Luxembourg doing all those great pieces, rehearsing, preparing
Yes,
them there. And what do you like or what do you appreciate about this festival, Rainy Days Festival?
it's so inclusive. It seems to include a very wide range of different possibilities and different sorts of activity. And this reminds me of the Scratch Orchestra in some ways, because the Scratch Orchestra was also open to a very wide range of different ideas. I mean, Cornelius Cardew was the the original inspiration, but he didn't try to control everything exactly. He always asked the participants to bring their own ideas, and he said the definition of the orchestra is not something he wanted to impose, but something he wanted to discover through the contributions of other performers. So everyone was encouraged to bring ideas to try out, and some ideas worked and some didn't, but the ones which were most effective or most useful would be incorporated in public performances, and sometimes only performed once or twice, and sometimes became scratch favorites. So but there was the opportunity for everyone to contribute something in that way. And I think the Rainy Days Festival has that quality of openness and inclusiveness, which reminds me of the scratch orchestra. So that's one thing although I haven't actually been to before, so it's I'm still open to discovering.
I think Catherine Conce is curating wonderfully, as you said, a very wide range, and still it fits somehow together, and the place is so beautiful, the architecture of the Philharmonie. And when you also say, you know, it's inclusive, or that like with scratch orchestra you could invite people who were non-musicians, do you think this is also still nowadays a way to get more people interested in our music, that they can participate and whatever, lose their fear, or that this is something weird we're doing, or
Yes, well, it's a matter of giving people confidence to be performers. If they're inclined to be performers and to participate, and they learn something from that, and they gain confidence in learning a new skill in that way. So I think it has the value, especially for the participants. But it's not really like a commodity, which is meant to appeal to other people and outside of the performance. It's more something which engages the performers themselves in an activity which is valuable for them. So the emphasis is really on participation rather than in creating a product for other people to enjoy. Cardieu was never terribly interested in audiences. He was more interested in just exploring what people could find out by participating. So yes, that's an important aspect of it at all. And it doesn't really matter what people think of it, because it's an experiment, and if it works, it works. Sometimes it works for the people who are participating. If it doesn't work, then you haven't lost anything. You've tried something new, and you've learned something from the experience. That's the important aspect, the experience of taking part. So
it's also freeing if you don't care about the audience, but I think a lot of artists care about the audience.
Yes. So and of course I do care about I care about the audience in the sense that I'm happy if people enjoy what I'm doing. This is now talking about my own music. But at the same time, I think one of your questions was about authenticity, and I have it here in front of me, so I can look at it again.
Well, I always like to ask what it means for you to be true and authentic in this music business, and how do you do that? And I mean, you have a lot of experience, and I'm sure we can learn something from you.
Yes, well, to me, I'm not really interested in music as a business. For me, it's a vocation and a learning experience, and a way of engaging with people in performance, as well as writing notes on paper and still being interested in the structure in the way that I described earlier. The actual structural connections within the music are still very interesting to me. But it's the way people respond and the way people turn this abstract structure into something that they can do together as performers, and then as listeners, what they understand from it is important. but I'm not really engaged in music as a business. It's something entirely outside of the commercial sphere. So the question of being successful or not doesn't really arise in those terms. And to me, music is a self-sufficient activity, in something which exists in and for itself and for the people involved. It's not something that I think of as a career or as wanting to be successful. And if I'm at all successful, it's, I think, in spite of myself. It's not something I aspire to.
And do you have like a musical routine, or do you compose every day or do something musical every day?
Well, I recently have been trying to practice the piano every day, because I have to be ready to do this performance next week. So normally I play the piano quite a lot, but not all the time. Sometimes I don't play for a month or two, and then I'm still thinking about music, and maybe I'm writing. I don't have a very rigid routine. I always think, well, I should be working, every morning from 9 o'clock until midday at least. I try to do this, but sometimes ideas just come spontaneously when you're not actually working, and that's also valuable to be open to. Maybe I'm out for a walk and I suddenly think of an idea which I scribble down on a notebook, and then when I come back, I can work out.
Do you have like musical rituals, or do you compose at the same time every day, or how do you go about this?
Yes, well, I try to be methodical and to do something every day. But I also like to be open to spontaneous things which arise when I'm not working. If I'm out for a walk, for example, or just doing something different, I might have an idea which I want to develop later. So I try to balance working in a disciplined and methodical way with doing other things which don't appear to have anything to do with composing, but which sometimes lead to spontaneous inspirations, which I can then develop when I sit down at my desk or when I'm playing the piano. So both, really. I'm not really very good at maintaining a rigid timetable. I tend to, if I'm working on a piece, I can work all day and maybe every day for a couple of weeks. But of course, as you know, composing is, it takes up a lot of energy and brain power. And now that I'm getting older, I can't always keep that up for every day. So I have to rest and do different things as well. But those other things that I do are also valuable, because mm-hmm. That's when the more spontaneous ideas can arise.
Yeah, so, it's interesting also this balance thing again with structure and being very open. And I think both have their yes. values. And I'm also a walking person. I go out every day, and depending on how much time I have, I have a beautiful forest, and right now we have this autumn colors. And when I don't have that much time, I just go to a park nearby, and I really need this. And especially yes, when I work, I'm very focused and I need to relax again.
Yes, well, that's true for me as well. As London has a lot of beautiful open spaces. You know London.
Yes.
So, yes. And I'm very lucky to live in a part of North London where there's lots of interesting places to go and nice walks and woodland and places to relax. So I can work in the morning and go out in the afternoon and combine both of these types of activity in the same day, because I don't have to teach. For a long time I was teaching in mainly in art schools and music with people who are engaged in performance and visual art. But now I'm retired from teaching, so I can do what I like, really. So I divide my time between more concentrated kind of work at home and more spontaneous kind of free association and just let it. And sometimes ideas just come for no, I can't explain where they come from, but if you're relaxed in a certain way, you can be receptive to things that happen. So I try not to exclude anything, just wait and see what comes along.
Yeah, it's really very great talking to you, and I wish you all the best for all the performances at Rainy Days Festival. And I have one last question for you.
Yes.
That's the question, also with your huge, vast background, what tip would you like to give young artists?
Well, I think the important thing is to know yourself. There's an ancient Greek maxim which is quoted in early Greek philosophy, to know yourself and find out what it is that is special about you as a person. And this is something that takes a lifetime to, you know, it's an endless quest really to discover who you are. And I think for young artists and composers, sometimes they may be too certain of what they want to do, but don't get fixed ideas about what you want to do, but allow development to take place and allow for change and evolution of your ideas. I remember once when I was a student at the Royal College of Music, another student said to me, his ambition was in maturity to realize the ideas which he had when he was young. And I thought, well, this sounds like a good idea, but on the other hand, it excludes the idea of changing and developing. So I would say, don't be too sure about what you want to do when you're young, but allow your experience to develop and inform what you're going to do. Always be open to new ideas and don't have a fixed idea about yourself, because there's a lot to discover.
Yeah, I thank you so much for this talk we did for Rainy Days Festival. I wish you wonderful performances and also playing the piano, and maybe I see you in Luxembourg. I'm there very shortly, but let's see if I can see you.
Let's meet in Luxembourg then. I'll look forward to that. Thank
Great.
You very much.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.